So here we are. Round one is over. And wow, what a race. What a race weekend. Not only on track, off track too. So in this video, we're going to check out what happened. We're going to revisit our predictions, I believe, to torture me, I guess. And before we do, though, 10K, thank you very much. 10,000 of you to have cracked the 10K mark of subscribers. Again, it would be good to have you guys commenting and let us know your thoughts. Please do so and carry on subscribing. With that out of the way, straight to Jad, who's going to come with the facts and I'm guessing some rimming. I'm ready. Let's go, Jad.
Well, let's not kid ourselves here. It was a boring race. Come on. And but yeah, lots of interesting facts after that. The fact that Red Bull even got better, even when we thought that they couldn't get better. So Max won 20 seconds plus from his teammate. Now, I'm going to give Checo the benefit of the doubt, because had he started higher up the grid, maybe he would have been closer. But we know Max was just cruising towards the end. So, yeah, that's debatable. But he finished the race this year, I think, 2 minutes faster than last year. Okay, that's one lap out of the 57. You can take it out. That means he covered the same distance with one lap or a bit more.
So he would have lapped himself, basically. That's what you're saying, right?
Yeah, probably.
That's incredible. Well, listen, the way I look at it, just to get context into this, because I'm not a technical guy. So Mercedes in 2021 unveiled this incredible package that had everyone's tongues wagging. And we thought, okay, this is going to be the benchmark. It turned out not to be the benchmark. It turned out to actually be a big problem for them. So much so that probably was the catalyst for Lewis Hamilton leaving them for Ferrari. So it looked like a dead end street because they couldn't develop. So what do they do? This year, they went and followed the Red Bull tried and proven RB19 path, and Red Bull, instead of resting on their laurels, looked at the Mercedes package. And I'm looking at Adrian Newey, he's thinking, wow, that's a good idea. I'll show you how to make it work. And they've basically taken what Mercedes had in principle, aero principle, let's say, and they've made it work better than Mercedes could and better than the RB19. Is that a fair assumption for a non-tech guy?
Well, yeah, for a non-tech guy, yeah. But we said something in when we had our video to review the cars. Like Red Bull, they went somewhere towards Mercedes packaging and the shape of the side pods and the side pod inlets, but they still have this kind of the same aero philosophy over the side pods and around the side pods. Now, the talk around the paddock is in a few races, that RB20 is going to look different. And depending on how it develops, then we could see, or we could really know if Red Bull followed the Mercedes path where they failed, if they can make it work. Up to now, no. I think it's the same philosophy for Red Bull, but yeah, it's taking hints from the Mercedes packaging, the vertical inlets, the way those shoulders on top of the car. But we will see in a few races time, because like I said, that car is going to keep evolving. And honestly, that's scary, because if they started the season with a new package, with a car that they're still learning, 2.5 tenths off the pace of a Ferrari, which proved that they were not showboating in testing. Yeah, Paul, they were not showboating. They were fast. They messed up Leclerc's brakes.
No, granted, they were. I mean, they were very fast.
They messed up Leclerc's brakes, but that's another thing. They were 2.5
On that note, can I just say something? Let's just get this elephant out of this room.
Yeah.
Okay, so I got it all wrong, which is fair. I mean, you know, it's a speculation. And I think I did have a disclaimer. So I got Max right. I mean, I think the whole world got Max right.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
That's no biggie. I got Sergio right, which oddly, not everybody got Sergio right, okay? Not everyone put it to 1-2. Okay,
yeah.
So I knew it would be a 1-2. So that was one thing. The losers, I don't really care about the losers. But end of the day, Mercedes threw a curveball at me. I think they threw a curveball at themselves. I think they thought they were better than they were, although otherwise they were not letting on. And Aston Martin were a bit of a disappointment. You know, I thought the car would be better. And again, it was Fernando Alonso. I think all those three drivers, George, Lewis, and Fernando, flattered to deceive in qualifying, and then they realized what they had in the race. That's how I look at it. And therefore, Sainz, who had an incredible race, in my opinion, the guy's just growing every time in stature. And the fact that he finished third is a bit of like a poke in the eye for Ferrari, who waved goodbye to him. So yeah, it was an interesting podium. I got it totally wrong, apart from the top two. Jad, your call.
Well, also look, the finishing order for the race, I got it wrong as well, because I think I said at the time, I said Max, Leclerc, and Checo. Now, Leclerc, in my defense, they messed up his brakes. He was locking up all over the place. So yeah, when I expected Ferrari to mess up a pit stop or a strategy, but they ended up messing the brakes. And the thing is, Leclerc had a 100-degree difference in temperature between the front brakes, left and right. And you know, these brakes on these cars are so sensitive to their operating temperature. So that was the problem. It seemed to be a problem at the start of the race. It stabilized a bit. Yeah, but he did a decent job to finish behind Sainz, but there was no way he could, fight for the podium. The big disappointment, like you said, is Mercedes. They showed they're decent in qualifying, but then they dropped back and they're blaming a cooling issue on the car. They got their cooling setup wrong. And that's currently worrying because the weather was not really hot in Bahrain. It was actually kind of chilly. You and I know in Bahrain and Dubai, and they're at this time of the year, they could get a bit cold. But yeah, Mercedes messed that thing up. McLaren are still a big question. We don't know what to do about McLaren, where to place them.
Okay, so let's look at it this way. 1-2, Red Bull, Red Bull. 3-4, Ferrari, Ferrari. So that's the pecking order of the top two. There's probably,
Exactly.
we'll discuss the gap later, maybe, or not even worth discussing. There's a gap. There's a 25-second gap over 57 laps, okay, to the best Ferrari. Then if you look at it, it's Mercedes, McLaren, Mercedes, McLaren. And then Aston Martin, Aston Martin. Those are the top 10. What do you make of that?
Yeah, exactly. Look, after preseason testing and after we saw the cars, we said McLaren and Mercedes are very close, and both of them are a bit of a question mark. But it turns out I feel that Mercedes were a bit better in Bahrain. I think McLaren, they know that track is not very good for them, and we might need to watch out what they do in Saudi Arabia next week. We'll see.
I'm going to go the route that, if you've got a good car, it's got to be good everywhere. These track-specific cars tells me that the package is not complete. I guarantee you the Red Bull is probably going to be a bullet everywhere. The Ferrari, let's see. It looks handy. And there's definitely a pecking order then. It's Red Bull, Ferrari, McLaren, Mercedes. It's a toss-up with Aston Martin right there. And then let's delve, not too long, but let's delve the rest, because this cost cap has not reduced the pecking order. The bad teams are bad. Some are worse than worse. But there's one that's particularly extremely bad. Chad.
Yeah, exactly. And here's where I have to raise my hand and say we all thought, and I thought, that Haas were the worst car. They were not, especially on quali pace. That car was decent. Nico Hülkenberg did a great job in qualifying, putting it into Q3. That car doesn't deserve to be there. But yeah, they're not as bad as we thought. The team that's really, really in a worrying state, Alpine. Wow, what a mess. What a mess.
It's really we headlined one of the stories that Reuters put out. It's the crumbling of an immense legacy. I mean, French Formula One fans, and they're many, and they're passionate, and they love their Formula One, and they're very knowledgeable. Like all, like Italians, like anyone who follows the sport, but the thing about it is they used to have so many drivers on the Formula One grid, and teams, and Ligier and all that. So there's a proud legacy. And Renault, I mean, Renault is like Ferrari for me in a certain way. It's a French Ferrari. They brought turbo into Formula One. They won world championships, and now they're in this. I mean, really, last on the grid, it was a horrible thing for me to witness, honestly.
Third year into the regulations, they still show up with a car that's 10 kgs overweight. By now, you should have this problem behind you. We know at the start of those regulations, those cars were heavy, and the teams, that's why we have the exposed carbon fiber look these days, because they're running around just to try to save weight. But Alpine are still 10 kgs overweight. That is worrying.
You know who's not? I don't think that they'd be laughing, but the guys who probably really relieved Oscar Piastri and Fernando Alonso, that they bailed out,
Yeah,
honestly.
exactly. And maybe a bit Otmar Szafnauer because the way he was treated in that team. Yeah. Just go watch Drive to Survive. Anyhow, there's some good news
Moving
for
on.
some good news for Zach Brown because he was moaning all weekend about how the RBs are taking so many components from Red Bull and yeah, they're gonna be close and that's not fair. Well, he could be happy a bit because they turned out to be not as good as we thought or as good as people were just hyping them up. Yeah, it was a sad race for them. I don't think it's a it's I
Yeah,
don't
man.
think.
I, honestly, I'm going to 100% agree with you. You know, and then the Yuki Daniel in sort of altercation. I mean, there was no points at stake. Daniel was going to catch nobody, and they decided to swap positions. And Yuki got upset, and rightfully so. I mean, you know, yes, but eventually he capitulated, and because Dan was saying he was quicker, and when Dan got ahead, he slowed them down. So, you know, first of all, Dan is so. Honestly, and I know this has pissed a lot of people off, but really, the way I'm seeing it, Dan is so finished. It's unbelievable. Please do not put him next to Max because Max will just absolutely annihilate him, you know. So it's a very strange thing because then there's reports that afterwards in multiple media where Yuki sort of showed his, yeah, disdain by punting into Daniel. So it's awkward and really not a good way to start being a team boss for Lauren Mekies. He's got to sort these guys out.
Yeah, exactly. That thing with RB was wrong on several levels. First of all, you can see Yuki challenging the management. I would have to say if Franz Tost was still there, that wouldn't have happened. So these new bosses, and I'm saying Peter Bayer as CEO and Lauren Mekies as team principal, they really need to mark their authority. Okay, when we say move, you move. Now, I get why they did it because they're not fighting for points, but then you know with these teams when they're out of the points, if they get a better position in the race, they can get a better position in the championship. So it was worth giving Daniel a shot to try to pass Magnussen, but you know Magnussen, mate, you can't pass him easily. And like you said, I fully agree about Daniel Ricciardo. He's past his peak. The way he left McLaren, the way he performed at McLaren is still a mystery for me. It mystifies me. Yeah, I don't think he's Red Bull material. I think the best thing is that they can use his experience to try and develop RB as a team in the future. But in terms of driving, yeah, he's past his sell date.
Yeah, you know, and you've got a guy like Liam Lawson sitting there watching all this. And Liam
Exactly.
deserves the chance, you know. So anyway, look, we digress too much time on bad teams. But one do thing I do want to mention, and it was impressive to see because, you know, let's put it, a lot of people on the fence. Guanyu Zhou, he was up in the top 10 at one stage, and he was, I think, the highest climber in the race. And I think you've got to give a shout out to a guy like that.
Yeah, look, I've always thought that Ju is doing a great job, and you know he's just doing it under the radar. You know, no flash, but he's decent, he's steady. Yeah, he didn't set the world alight, but I think he's a decent driver, and I don't know what the future holds for him, especially when Sauber become Audi. But for me, yeah, I think he's performing better than Bottas these days.
Yeah, but listen, final word, Logan Sargeant, you know, sorry, James Vowles, you got it wrong, mate. The guy's just a mistake having. He was the guy who had made the biggest mistake in Abu Dhabi last year. I think he spun out and then he spun out again. Yeah, he didn't spin out. He missed his brakes and he starts shouting. That kid, let's put him in WEC. Let him get track time. He's only good for about 10, 15 laps, you know, so he needs seat time and they've got to give that to somebody else. Give it to Liam, man. Give that seat to Liam Lawson because Logan is just not getting any better. I'm not seeing him getting any better. What's your call on Logan?
Yeah, I agree, mate. We were skeptical and about him. And honestly, when Williams decided to renew his contract, I was surprised because if you're coming in with a fresh team boss with a fresh vision for the team,
Bring a
Alex Al
driver. Bring a good
ex
driver.
exactly. Alex is doing a great job. Bring someone who could just match Alex, who can support Alex, you know? But yeah, end of the day, I think it's the American link with Darlington Capital, so.
Yeah, okay, man. Now to close off, we're going to close off on a high. Max Verstappen on another planet. Toto read our headline and he went one further. Max in another galaxy. Okay,
Yeah.
so that gives you a sign. And he was superb. He was supreme. 10 out of 10 performance, just a masterclass. And I'm going to run out of superlatives for this guy. Sergio Perez, he did what he had to do. He finished second. Should have been closer, but he's not going to be a lot closer. Max will decide the gap. But Sergio has to do what he did today. He has to finish second. He did it. Box ticked. Carlos Sainz, superb, superb. Driver of the day, thoroughly deserved. And just growing in stature. And I really hope he doesn't go to Audi. And I hope he gets a big driver, the team that can really give him what he deserves. I think Audi is very uncertain. Mercedes need to give him a drive, I would say, because they need a driver. Now, forget Antonelli, and I'm because the jury's out on George. Qualifying, he was great, but in the race, he made some mistakes. So I think Carlos and Russell are starting to sound a lot more palpable. So happy to see those three guys on the podium, thoroughly deserved. And boring race, but I love Formula One, so I'm up for the next boring, exciting Grand Prix because it's going to be a Max show, I have no doubt. And I think Sergio will finish second on the stretch.
Exactly, a superb drive from Max, and also they get the preseason sandbagging championship. Honestly, Checo, he did what he needed to do, and look, in qualifying he was behind, but not as much as he was last year. He improved 3.5 tenths, which is fine. He's never gonna match Leclerc in qualifying in a Ferrari. Let's know that Leclerc is the best qualifier out there. So Checo did what he did. That's perfect. He needs to keep doing this. Put his head down, focus on that. That's it. Signs, yeah, it's a great message for Ferrari, for everyone out there. Look, I'm here. I'm good. You should hire me. I agree with what you said about Mercedes, but maybe why don't you put him in a Red Bull with next to Max when Checo's contract is over?
Okay, now for the real elephant in the room. How about the Christian Horner story, man? That was something that really hogged the headlines and almost overshadowed the Grand Prix weekend. What's your take on that?
Yeah, Horner, when we got the news that he was cleared by the investigation in Red Bull, honestly, I sighed in relief because you don't want to go into the first race of the season with this kind of vibe or this kind of story just, shadowing the championship. And then the next day we got the leaks, okay, the alleged evidence that was leaked. Now, it doesn't seem to be affecting Red Bull. They have a decent car. I don't think Red Bull are going to be affected on the short term. Maybe in the long term, yes. But yeah, it is the elephant in the room. We try as much as possible, and you and I agreed on this when we were covering the story. We just covered the facts because it's a very sensitive topic to deal with. Ha Most of it is a personal part, which we don't have any business into, you know. But yeah, end of the day, it affects one of the great characters in our sport. It affects the thousand or more people that work at Red Bull, and especially in this run of success which they have. So yeah, it's just sad that we have to deal with these kind of things now. I hope we can get to a quick conclusion, put it behind us, you know, because you can see the politicking happening, and yeah. Like I said, we cannot avoid talking about it, but yeah, I think we should let this thing run its course and try as much as possible to focus on the positives on the season ahead. Yeah.
Yeah, from my side too, I was very relieved actually that Horner got exonerated by the investigation. But at the same time, he wasn't really because all the stuff came out and stuff. But hats off to him. He's been a super trooper. I mean, if this was a situation for me, I'd probably run away from it all, go find myself some secluded spot somewhere and just hide. But he hasn't. He's come out shooting and Jerry at his side at the track. Very, very public. Show of affection, which got huge tabloid exposure. So yeah, they're fighting for their marriage. They're fighting for their reputations and kudos. This is how they're doing it. So I'm very impressed with the way they're handling it. We still don't know what's going to happen, but for me, is I've got to always ask the question: is who's the source of this problem? And there's a lot of speculation, a lot of rumors, a lot of everything. And one thing I'd like to say is that fathers in the pit boxes. Is a no-no. Ask anyone who's been involved from karting all the way. Unless the fathers are running their sons, you do not want a father. I was a karting father. You don't want me in your pit garage because I'm watching everybody who's getting that sprocket, who's getting that plug. So Yeah, you have a guy who was 17 when he got into Formula One. Sure, he needed his dad. He did need his dad through the Toro Rosso days and the early days, even up until he won his first title. But now that Max has won his first title and he's a far better driver than Jos Verstappen ever was, you know, he does not need his father there. You know, you do not go as a 25, 27, 28, 29-year-old corporate guy into your corporate office and get into your corporate debt, and there's your dad, you know, hovering around the office. I don't care that his son is a corporation. On Grand Prix weekends, he is a Formula One driver who drives for a Formula One team. There is no room for a father, be it Jos, be it Checo's dad, be it whoever. You know, when time was right, Anthony Hamilton was there and in the background, sure, all the time. But when the time came, it was a parting. The sons have become their own men. And Max Verstappen is one of the greatest drivers Formula One ever saw. Jos is not. And I get that. I get that. If I was managing a Formula One team, I'd say no dads, no dads. Without pointing a finger, but definitely going by where everything points, there seems to be a clash between Horner and Verstappen, Jos Verstappen, with Max in the middle. And there's a grave being dug. I just don't know who's going to fall into that grave.
Jos today, he gave a quote to the media, and we ran it on Grand Prix 247. He's saying he's blaming Horner, that the team is going to explode as long as Horner's there. He's causing the problems and everything. Look,
Well, there's a smoking gun as far as I'm concerned. You know, I'm not saying this is what happened, but this is how the narrative is turning.
the smart thing, whether you're with Horner or not, whether Horner is guilty or not, it's kind of a sensitive situation just to keep quiet, you know, no comment. In these times, the best word to say is no comment. At least Dr. Marco's saying that, you know, and we know how volatile he can be.
Absolutely. And I'm going to actually end this one by actually, you picked a very good analogy here, which is basically this. Alain Prost, the class act that he is, was asked, what's happening at Alpine? What did he say? You could open up. I'm telling you, if anyone knows what's going on, it's Alain. He said, no comment. And I bet you he was itching to make a comment, but he didn't because he's a gentleman. He's smart. He's a smart man. Jos, hey Jos, what do you make of the Horner thing? Bomb, 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 bomb. Because trailer. Sorry, but that's what comes to mind. Whatever the case, one down, 23 to go. We need to find 23 headlines of Max Masterclass. Jeez, it's going to be difficult. And the next one's like soon in Saudi. It's don't do anything on Thursday, don't do anything on Friday, don't do anything on Saturday. It's Formula One. Okay, so guys, hope you enjoyed this video, and let's know your thoughts. Let us know about the pecking order. Let us know about Christian Horner. Let us know whatever. Max, Joss, whatever. It would be really nice to hear from you. Until next week, we will get the next one, unless something huge breaks in between. Enjoy it and have a great Saudi Arabian Grand Prix weekend. Cheers.